the majority of the Muslims, for various reasons, they have chosen Abu Bakr. If he wanted to insist on his right as the caliph of the Muslims, then it was very likely for the whole religion of Islam to be endangered because of various reasons. I mean, we have some tribal issues, we have the threats of Roman empires and Iranian empires, we have the issue of some apostates, and so on and so forth. Imam alayhi salam himself says that I thought about this issue, that am I able to have a kind of uprising without any helper to take my right back, or just to be patient? Then I realized that to be patient is closer to an action, a right action. That is why I remained patient, although it was very difficult. So that is one point.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
At the time of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the right of caliphate, the right of establishing a government, belongs to Imam Hadi alayhi salam. But he doesn't establish a government in the year 11 after Hijrah because people are not ready, because there are many threats. So although he does not establish a government, it doesn't mean that this does not belong to him and this is not his right. The other point is that sometimes the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam do not try to establish a government, because if they try to do so, they are going to be killed, or the Shia are going to be killed and to be martyred. This is the case for the majority of our Imams. We know that Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, for some month he was in power. He was the next caliph after Imam Hadi alayhi salam.
Yes.
But confronted with Muawiyah and his policies, at the end of the day, Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam remained with just few sincere companions, to the extent that even some of the commanders of his army joined the army of Muawiyah. Also, he was injured in that battle against Muawiyah. And that is why he comes to a peace treaty with Muawiyah. But still, Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam does not mean that the right of caliphate belongs to Muawiyah. No, he doesn't see the situation ready for him to establish a government.
Yes.
And that is why, according to many, according to some historical reports, one of the articles of that peace treaty was that after Muawiyah, the caliph would be Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, or if he is not alive, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam would be the next caliph.
So it doesn't make a difference whether they call him a caliph or imam.
Sure.
The administration and establishing government.
Exactly.
Was, okay.
In our narrations and Sunni narrations, both Khalifa and Imam are used for the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. It doesn't make any difference. And I mean, Imam is Imam, whether he is in power or not. I mean, we know that Shia used to refer to the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, even if they were not in power. The case of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is different. We know that Muawiyah did not act upon that peace treaty. He appointed Yazid as the next caliph after him, which was against the articles of the peace treaty.
Yes.
And Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam realized that now, if he does not have any uprising, the whole Islam would be in danger. And that is because of the fact that the ruler of Muslims now is a very corrupted man, like Yazid himself says that "Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un." We are from God, and to Him we would return. وَعَلَى الْإِسْلَامِ السَّلَامِ إِذْ قَدْ بُلِيَتِ الْأُمَّةُ بِرَاعٍ مِثْلِ يَزِيدٍ. It's a very famous saying of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, that now the Islamic Ummah, the Islamic nation, have an affliction. And the affliction is that the ruler, the caliph of Muslims, is a person like Yazid. And if he's going to be the ruler, wa'ala al-Islam as-salam, mm-hmm. the religion of Islam would finish, would come to its end.
Yes.
And that is why Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has an uprising.
Yes.
And the other point is that apparently the people of Kufa are going to help him.
Mm-hmm.
So seemingly the situations are ready for Imam to establish a government. And that is why he tries to go to the city of Kufa and mm-hmm. to later establish a government, but
right.
he's not able to do so.
Now, the question is that why, for example, when people go to Imam Ali alayhi salam, he has a famous sentence that, for example, the government or political system is, for me, lower than the, mm-hmm. for example, saliva of the mouth of a sheep or mm-hmm. something like that.
That's a very good question. Thank you for asking this question. As I mentioned, I repeat to what I mentioned earlier, the establishment of a government for the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam is just a means.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the goal. If establishing a government is a goal, then Imam alayhi wasalam should not say so. But he says that... By saying that it is lower than, for example, the saliva of a sheep, for example, he means that government in its mundane understanding, if it is only having the mundane power. So the imams are not looking for power as the goal.
Mm-hmm.
If they are going to establish a government, is for putting into practice the Islamic laws. That is why Imam Ali alayhi salam himself continues in that famous narration that unless I'm able to, for example, take the right of the people.
Yes.
This is mentioned in
yes.
the same narrations. Which means that, as I mentioned, establishing an Islamic government in and of itself is not the goal. Because sometimes, you are not able to reach this goal. This is the means. If this is the means, then you would analyze the situation. Are the situations, the conditions ready for you as the imam to establish a government? If you establish the government, what are the positive points and what are the negative points? For Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, if he continues to have war against Muawiyah, not only himself, the sincere Shia
yes.
would have been martyred.
Okay.
So he's not going to try for... establishing a government.
That's right.
But for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, he sees that if he does not do anything, if he does not have the uprising, then wa'ala al-Islam as-salam, Islam would be endangered.
Okay.
So establishing a government is one of the Islamic rulings, and it is based on the Islamic plan for life
mm-hmm.
and for social life and political life. Of Muslims, it is the right and duty of the imams, but the situation might not be ready, and we see that it was ready only for
That's
Imam
right.
Ali alayhi salam for some years, and for Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam for some months.
Yes.
The other imams, they did not try to establish
mm-hmm.
because the situations were not ready, and of course, we are waiting for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam to establish a world
okay.
government.
I think we have to also dedicate one session to the wakala system
exactly.
of the infallibles, which worked as a, we can say, surrogate system,
mm-hmm.
or it's better to say...
a deputyship
to the kingdom of the time. It was very much strong. It was very much systematic. It worked as a government for the Shia world on that time. Inshallah, upcoming
sure.
session, we'll talk about this episode, this topic too. Thank you much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration.
My pleasure.
Thank you much, Sheikh Karimi. It was very kind of you.
My pleasure.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. See another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran labani Ali wa Husayn wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان. الآن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نارا من لبن إن في الجنة نارا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
A ghetto with high walls for Palestinians.
In accepting the mandate for Palestine after the First World War, His Majesty's government in the United Kingdom undertook to work for the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people on the understanding that nothing should be done which might prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. It was assumed at that time that the objects of the mandate could be carried out with the consent and cooperation of both peoples. Time has shown that this assumption was incorrect.
Arabs were against the establishment of a Jewish ruling under any circumstances, and they were vocal in their opposition.
I come to you, sir, as a representative of the people of Palestine, as an Arab whose roots are deeply embedded in that tortured land. The Arab people are deeply anxious to find a just and lasting solution to the problem before you.
Jewish people belonged in this society of nations. Surely the Jewish people is no less deserving than other peoples whose national freedom and independence have been established and whose representatives are now seated here. The Jewish people were your allies in the war and joined their sacrifices to yours to achieve a common victory.
The Arabs of Palestine are not claiming their country on pledges made to them, for it belongs to them. Nor are the Arabs claiming their independence on assurances. They are entitled to such independence as being their natural and inalienable right.
We hope that that people, now rebuilding again its national life in its ancient homeland.
But on May 14, 1948, just a few hours before the British sovereignty over Palestine came to an end, the establishment of so-called Israeli state was announced.
Soviet Union, yes. United Kingdom, abstain. The United States, yes. Uruguay, yes. Venezuela, yes. Yemen, no. Yugoslavia, abstain.
The resolution of the Duck Committee for Palestine was adopted by 33 votes, 13 against, 10 abstentions.
Now, the Jews had a land after centuries of homelessness, and that was the promised land, Jerusalem. No one insulted them anymore. There were no Nazi furnaces. Instead of wearing the Star of David on their armbands, they proudly put on the flag of their newly established state and freely prayed against the Wailing Wall. The international community allowed them to establish the so-called State of Israel on Palestinian land, because of the oppression they suffered during the Holocaust in Europe. But Palestinians were forced to leave their homes so Jews could live in them. There was no place left for Palestinians any longer, except for refugee camps established by Israel. But what did the Holocaust have to do with the Palestinians? They had absolutely no role in it. Everyone thinks Israel is a state established by Jews. But among Jews in Iran are those who consider Israel born out of a movement that has no relevance with the religion of Moses.
You have here at least 40, 50 types of books against Zionism and the state of Israel. Here is just a crown, that means the crown of the Torah. And here is just the beginning of each the Ten Commandments. The sixth, don't kill. The eighth, don't steal. The basic of the Jewish religion is to trust God. If God sends us in exile, stay in exile. We have to wait for the coming of Messiah. Usually we're making a fire, we're banning the Israeli flag and banning the Israeli movement. To show the state of Israel can't speak in the name of Jewish people. It is violent only if it brings violence. It's only a symbol to show total opposition, especially for our Yod, to show them this goes in deep, deep into their heart. If we are not enjoying fighting, and of course we are not enjoying burning a flag, but this is, we do what we have to do, we do what's our duty.
Nechirai Karta, like many others, considers Judaism different from Zionism and says that the state of Israel is the outcome of the movement. The Zionist movement did not rise from the Israelite prophets, but has its roots in the past century. The movement was founded by Theodor Herzl, Austrian journalist and politician. Herzl was a Jew, but his thoughts did not stem from the Torah or Talmud, but they were mostly rooted in secularism school of thought. He wrote a book entitled The Jewish State and was seeking to establish a homeland for Jews. Initially, it triggered the migration of a large number of Jews to the United States. Jews gradually created a political and economic network in the US and Europe. The major banks were owned by the Zionists, who also started controlling the cinema, the new phenomena at the time. Their dominance in power and wealth in the U.S. rose to such an extent that spurred many people like Henry Ford, the founder of the Ford automaker, to react. Ford usually used the word the bankers to refer to the Zionist Jews. He believed that it was the Zionists who pushed the First World War forward. But more interesting than all of them were the remarks by Benjamin Friedman, who was a Zionist movement founder, but later on was detached from the movement and blew the lid off the movement.
1914 was the year in which World War I broke out. There are a few people here my age who remember that. Now, that war was waged on one side by Great Britain, France, and Russia, and on the other side by Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Turkey. Within 2 years, Germany had won that war. Not alone won it nominally, but won it actually. Not a shot had been fired on the German soil. Not an enemy soldier had crossed the border into Germany. And yet, here was Germany offering England peace terms. Well, England in the summer of 1916 was considering that. Seriously, they had no choice. It was either accepting this negotiated peace that Germany was magnanimously offering them, or going on with the war and being totally defeated. While that was going on, the Zionists in Germany, who represented the Zionists from Eastern Europe, went to the British War Cabinet. The Zionists in London went to the British War Cabinet and they said, look here, you can yet win this war. They told England, we will guarantee to bring the United States into the war as your ally, to fight with you on your side, if you will promise us Palestine after you win the war.
Now, years have passed since the establishment of the so-called State of Israel, and the Jews there freely pray near the Wailing Wall. On the other hand, the Palestinians have no right to enter their territory without getting approval. Every morning, they have to wait in long lines to cross the cement walls and enter the territory that once belonged to them. Palestinian children regretfully stay behind the walls and witness their homes and land being confiscated. Israeli children grow up with a grudge and hatred against Arabs. On the other side, they treat Palestinian children as criminals. Jews in Israel treat the people of Palestine exactly the same way that the Nazis treated them in the past. They constructed a ghetto with high walls for Palestinians.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we'll listen to your questions, your queries that you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers of our experts are based on Noble Quran and the narrations of Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Well, today in our studio, we have with us Brother Miqdad, an Islamic scholar. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you too, and to all the listeners for being with us today.
Well, Brother Miqdad, you know, we have been discussing how can we stop our children from lying, or how can we encourage them to speak the truth. And now we have another question which is quite related to this topic, is that how do we stop them from, you know, using the foul language?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, again, a very important question as well, regarding how we speak and using foul language. So first and foremost, we know that using language, we're using bad words, using words that are not appropriate, swear words, is against the etiquette of how we speak.
Right.
As Muslims, we have been taught that in our speech, not only should we be truthful, but we should also be avoid using
abusive words,
swear words, words that will offend others, words that are considered within a society as bad words, basically,
right,
as foul language. We should avoid that because it is against social etiquettes, and it is against being polite and respectful. And it's against being having this self-respect for ourselves, which inshallah we'll talk about in a second. So as much as we can, we need to encourage ourselves, obviously, first and foremost, and then our children to have the right appropriate, the right and appropriate way of speaking, the good etiquette of speaking, which includes avoiding foul language. Unfortunately, we find that in today's world, in today's culture, it's very easy, very, very easy. People have swear words every two words, unfortunately,
right,
sometimes, especially youngsters, youth, based on what they see in the cartoon and movies, etc., but also on the music that they listen to, and generally the environment and the culture that we live in. It's a very foul and very dirty culture, and we need to be very, very careful when it comes to our children, that they should not fall into this, because it really goes against good etiquette. It goes against self-respect. It's hated in Islam to speak in such a way. A mu'min speaks in such a beautiful way that we others should enjoy the company of a believer. They should enjoy being with him, how sweet he speaks, how respectfully he speaks, how he holds himself in a social context.
Right. Well, Brother Miqdad, where it comes from, keeping that aside for a while, reminded me of a video that I received on my, I would say, WhatsApp from one of our relatives who were like laughing and giggling around. And I was like, what's the topic? Why they are, you know, laughing so much? And then, like, as the video moves on, I found a very little boy in the family who was using kind of foul language, and everyone was laughing around. So they were kind of, you know, I don't know, as if they were hearing that for the first time, but they were laughing. And the more they were laughing, the more the boy was getting encouraged.
Definitely. So that's a very important point. We need, as parents, to make sure that we don't ourselves speak in this way. Obviously, if we are going to be speaking this way, then our children will pick it up straight away. But not just ourselves, we should be also not encouraging it. If children do speak it like this, then do give them a reminder to tell them this is not an accepted way of speaking at home. And it's a matter of habit, right? If they're used to hearing and being in this environment where they hear good language, they hear good etiquette in how we speak, then naturally they will be less likely to be using these kind of words.
Yes, exactly. So we will discuss more with you, Brother Miqdad, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5 years old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. We want to delve a little deeper into the topic how not to use foul language when it comes to kids and what can you do as parents. So we discussed so far is that we discussed the point where from it comes, and so knowing that could help you actually stop that. And now we also want to discuss, we said it should not be encouraged as well. Because the more it's encouraged, sometimes you really are not in that environment, but sometimes like a child picks it from somewhere in the air, and then, you know, parents encourage it, like smile at it or laugh around, or they feel like, what is it? And that really encourages a child.
So that's somewhere in the air that you mentioned. We have to go back to the source. Where is this somewhere? Definitely it's not in the air. It can be their school friends. It can be the TV shows that they watch. It can
right.
be... you need to find out where they've been. Sometimes it can be even novels that they read. We need to, as parents, really be careful in what children are exposed to. If you find that they're watching inappropriate TV shows, cartoons, animations, movies, then try to reduce it. Explain to them that this is not teaching you the correct way of speaking. Or if they're reading the wrong books, or if they have the wrong friends as well, then encourage them to really rethink about, depends how old they are, obviously, about this interaction that leads them to acquire these bad traits and these bad habits. Sometimes we have to also go back to their role models because children pick up these things from the role models that they have.
Most of the times.
Yes. So as much as you can, encourage them to have the right role models. Encourage or make it available for them to interact with peers or even mentors or even young adults that are a bit older than them that will can become good role models for them, and they can teach them how to speak. See, if the children interact in an environment of adults that are speaking well, if you take them, for example, to mosque and you let them interact with the people that you are interacting with, then naturally what happens is that they'll be hearing this way of speaking and they'll copy this way of speaking, which is a nice way of speaking, which is, has the etiquette and the adab of a speech that doesn't have foul language, doesn't have swearing. So this is an important point, that the environment that they're in will have definitely an impact. We pick up the way we speak is picked up from who we speak to.
Right.
It's very natural. I don't know if you've noticed, if you have kids and
yes,
you travel
a
lot, if they go to a different city, for example, and the different city may have a different accent, for example, you'll find that their accent will change.
Right.
Very naturally, right? If they're going from one city to another, or one country to another, let's say, for example, you live in the UK and you go to Canada, or you live in France and you go to...
There will be a shift in your accent.
There'll be a shift in the kid's accent, right? Naturally, right? Because they'll be interacting with these people. So who we interact with is essential in developing this habit of foul language and not speaking properly.
I have also done Masters of Linguistics, so I know that very well. We have been through this thing that if a child, or especially a child or anyone who feels like this particular accent, that the one who I'm talking to right now is a kind of better than mine, or he has a complex with his own accent, then he tries to copy or use or shift his accent to the one who he is speaking to because of that inferiority complex that develops within him. Well, it's very important, though, who they are talking with. So let's learn more from your brother Miqdad, but we'll take a short break and we'll be back in a while.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, encourage your sons in their childhood to learn etiquette, so that in their grown-up age, they can be the joy of your eyes.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. We are with Brother Miqdad, and we are talking about how we can teach our children not to use foul language, which I would say boys mostly learn from what I have seen, although I won't say it happens all the time. But you know, if the boys are playing around in the playground and most of the, you know, Some of the young boys will go to those who are a little elder than them and are especially playing sports like football and all. I would see most of the times in such kind of games, these languages are often used.
That's correct. Again, it comes back to the environment that it's been created. As you mentioned, football is a good example. Football is very often mixed with these kind of language, right? There's a foul that happens, somebody tackles the wrong way, or they miss a shoot, for example, and the first thing that comes in their mouth is a swear word or a bad word. But it's a matter of teaching. If you teach your children that this is how we do it, if you make them play in an environment where everybody has this respect for one another, they play for the beauty of the game, for that skill that happens when you have the ball in your feet, rather than the temperament, rather than the fouling, rather than the swearing, then these are things that I've been taught, and the environment really plays a big role. To conclude this section, I'd like to share a hadith and draw away one more point regarding this. There's a hadith from Amir al-Mu'minin that says that مَا أَفْشَحَ كَرِيمٌ قَتُّ, that a person who is a kareem, a person who has self-respect, a person who has self-honor for themselves, they will never swear. They will never use bad words. They will never go towards fahsha.
Okay.
And it comes back to the point that we mentioned in the question regarding lying as well, that a person who has self-importance, a person or a child who counts themselves as important, as worthy, as valuable, they respect themselves. And this has been taught by their parents. The parents have given them respect. The parents have given them value. They feel important within the family. What happens is that such a person will never go towards fahsha, towards using bad language and swear words, because they count themselves as more important than lowering themselves and downgrading themselves to this extent. In fact, the opposite. A person who's so humiliated, a person who doesn't have any value for themselves, they feel like, I've got nothing to lose. It's easy for them. It's easier for them to use bad words, because bad words is something evil, right? Something very dark, something very humiliating. And they don't have any self-respect. Therefore, they're happy to associate themselves with something
those
that is
bad
so...
words.
Exactly.
Yeah. And unfortunately, today's environment that is teaching us that if you use it, you kind of feel a little lighter. But what very important point that you have drawn from this hadith is that they're looking for that self-honor and self-respect and respecting themselves, or kind of maybe we'll say finding attention using these, I would say, false language or using swear words. But here's the key point now. We know that the person who respects himself won't do that. So we have to teach our children to respect themselves, to value themselves, to feel that they are important. Well, thank you so much, Brother McDowell, for being with us and sharing those beautiful tips with us.
Thank you to you and to all the listeners.
Well, dear listeners, thank you so much for listening. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. In case you want to listen to our programs again, go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. Go to the tab, Call of Islam, and you'll find an archive of our programs there. Or in case you had any queries regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find our programs on the social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returns upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio. For those who seek the truth.
Allah, 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 Allah.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of Spring truth. Of
Allahu ya Allah, subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah, walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah, wallahu akbar.
Date September 9th, 1964. Place, the city of Rome. Warning to the Muslim states concerning the Palestinian question. I ask the Muslim government, why do you fight over rivers? The land of Palestine has been usurped. O you hopeless ones, you are fighting each other. Palestine has been usurped and you are squabbling over a river. While you dispute over a river, the Israelis have established a government in Palestine. They have driven those misfortune Arabs out, and now a million or more of them are sleeping in desert, hungry and bereft.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience well this is Zainab Musavi okay on the subject of the Quds occupier regime that is Israel Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said I regard supporting the plan for independence of Israel and its recognition tragedy for the Muslims and an explosion for the Muslim government Well, this sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh is about the danger of supporting Israel by Muslim nations. Well, he is indicating the right path to the Muslim nations, which leads to victory. His point is that if regional nations could be uniting and delivering and relieving themselves from Israel and its main backer, that is the US, then victory would be undoubtedly achieved. All Muslim states and nations should know that this evil of Israel, backed by foreign hands, seek to divide them, see that these divisions cause weakness and destruction, and they should see that fake Israel was now oppressing the Muslims. The Zionist regime has political instability and has changed 4 prime ministers in only 4 years. Party coalitions collapse before forming. There is an extreme bipolarity throughout the fake regime, which is highlighted by the demonstrations of hundreds of thousands of people in some cities.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi,
sallallahu alayhi.
Iran has been at the forefront to represent and to give voice to the struggle for Palestinians, and therefore it has played a very important role globally in the highlighting this issue and in insisting and speaking about the unity of the Ummah. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi emphasized that Muslim nations should take pride in the fact that their enemies are the enemies of the merciful God and the Holy Book of Quran and the religion of Islam. There are some whose foolish fantasies for the realization of a greater Israel caused them to set the whole world on fire. In order to achieve their greedy desires, they commit crimes that are too shameful to even write or speak about. And in this regard, what Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh considered to be the solution for the oppressed people of the world in face of the impasses ahead was not to depend on either the East or the West. Rather, they should follow the political, social, economical, and military culture of humanity's greatest guides that are the infallible Imams. Thank you very much for being with us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
The amount of groundwater storage in the Gaza Strip is very few. Studies made by the Palestinian Water Authority, PWA, and WHO indicate that the amount has been decreasing. In 1975, the amount of groundwater storage was 1,200 million cubic meters. The amount decreased to 800 million cubic meters in 1995. The storage is expected to be exhausted in 2020 as the population grows day by day.
طبعا احنا الان نقف عند البئر الشيخ رضوان رقم 1.
We are now at Al Sheikh Radwan well number 1. Being exhausted, the well was replaced with another well dug by the Gaza municipality using the same equipment as the former one. We are now going to the new alternative well. This is the water meter of the well that measures water supply quantities. This well supplies 120 cubic meters per hour. It's a relatively high rate in Gaza compared to the idea that the groundwater aquifer has become shallow. The annual recharge quantity of the well is estimated at approximately 50 million cubic meters. In contrast, average annual demand of water is estimated at approximately 200 million cubic meters. So there is a big gap between supply and demand. This shortage caused salinity of groundwater. According to the international standards, the maximum chloride concentration in drinkable water is 250 milligrams per liter. Groundwater supplied through municipalities' networks contains approximately 1,000 milligrams per liter. Sometimes chloride reaches 2,000 milligrams per liter. This is due to seawater intrusion. There is scarcity of water. What can we do? We just keep over pumping. The aquifer is like a piece of sponge full of drinkable water. When we pump the entire quantity of water that was refilled by rainfall, groundwater turned saline due to seawater intrusion. Water supplied to this area is too saline. Frankly, it is not suitable for human use. In addition, we suffer from interruption of the water supply. Sometimes, water becomes available at the same time as a power failure. So I have to use an electrical generator, like this one here, to turn on the water pump engine for pumping the water in this tank to the tanks in the roof. I put this water tank here to get it full of water when water becomes available during a power failure. Actually, the water we receive is very saline. It is as saline as seawater. Though we use it in our daily domestic use, nobody can drink it.
بالنسبة للحمضيات بصفة عامة تتأثر بنوعية المياه.
Citrus, in general, is affected by water varieties. This type of citrus is of good quality. This is due to the good quality of water that irrigates citrus trees in this area and makes them grow well and produce better quality products.
بصورة جيدة ويكون الإنتاج في بجودة أفضل.
كل ما كانت نسبة الملوحة كل ما زادت نسبة الكلور أثر على
The more the salinity rate increases, the more chloride affects citrus. Citrus is sensitive. It does not produce well unless it is appropriately maintained. Orange trees have been replaced with these olive trees. We hope this will succeed and compensate for the loss of citrus. Olive trees can bear salinity and more dangerous time factors. They need less water than citrus trees, which need large quantities of water. Olive can bear saline water much better than citrus because the roots of an olive tree are stronger. Water in this area was of good quality, but now the salinity rate is high. This grove used to produce 200 tons. Now it is all dried up because of the scarcity of good quality water. The quality of water is relative. Water in the area of the Gaza Valley is not of as good a quality as it is in the northern or southern areas of the Strip. In the northern area, you can plant anything because of the good quality of its water and soil. Even the soil quality is relative. The quality of water in Rafah, for instance, is good compared to the water in the Gaza Valley area.
Groundwater is the only local water resource that meets the growing demand of water for housekeeping, agriculture, manufacturing, etc. in the Gaza Strip. The qualitative and quantitative decline of groundwater is related to the resources, like rainfall, that recharges the groundwater aquifer.
This well was established about 60 or 70 years ago. Now it is abandoned because of the extremely high concentration of salinity in its water. Olives depend on the rainfall in January. When it does not rain during this month, olives' productivity declines. As you see, the trees in this grove are dried and about to die because of the scarcity of good quality water. The average rainfall is stable here. The annual average reaches approximately 110 million liters. But the Gaza Strip's needs grow constantly. According to some recent estimates, Gaza's annual need is approximately 200 million liters of rainfall. Just half of that quantity is available annually. Most rainfall in the Gaza Strip is missed due to widespread construction and concrete structures, which cover 30% of the area of the Gaza Strip. This percentage may be, according to the international standards, very high. It limits utilization of rainfall to recharge the aquifer.
Gaza Valley, one of the longest valleys in Palestine, was one of the main sources that recharged the groundwater aquifer of the Gaza Strip. It stems from the hills of Asmu' village in Hebron. It extends from the east of Gaza to the Mediterranean coast in the west. It is about 160 kilometers in length. Its length in the Gaza Strip is 9 kilometers inside Gaza.
The annual amount of its water runoff is estimated at 20 million cubic meters. The Israeli occupation blocks the flow of water and prevents it from reaching the Gaza Strip.
The Gaza Valley area should be a nature preserve that protects Palestinian wildlife and migrating birds. This valley extends from the east to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. Unfortunately, the Israeli occupation prevented the water of the valley from reaching Gaza. Thirty years ago, this area, which extends from the Al Zaytun neighborhood to the Gaza Valley, was known for its citrus groves and orange groves in particular. The Gaza Valley is one of the thefts of the Palestinians' water resources committed by the Israeli occupation. We are talking about 20 million cubic meters that have been stolen annually since the building of those dams 40 years ago. So after building those dams and stopping the Gaza Valley's water, we are talking about hundreds of millions of cubic liters stolen from the Israeli side.
Sources of groundwater in the Gaza Strip depend on the coastal aquifer, which extends from the Carmel Mountain in the north to the Sinai Peninsula in the south. Gaza portion of the coastal aquifer, groundwater, is being a subject of a secret war that only Allah and specialists of the field are aware of.
The Israeli occupation has built thousands of wells around the Gaza Strip, preventing approximately 30 to 40 million cubic meters from naturally reaching the Strip. So preventing the water of this valley from running into the Gaza Strip is a theft of Palestinian water resources committed by the occupation.
The Israeli occupation does not only steal Gaza's portion of the groundwater in the aquifer. The occupation has stolen hundreds of millions of cubic meters of water through the Israeli settlements that had existed in the Gaza Strip for tens of years.
This area was occupied by Israel. It was known as the Gush Katif settlement. The Israeli occupation used to steal groundwater from the area. This pipe is the only evidence that was used in stealing hundreds of millions of cubic meters of drinkable groundwater. Now we are in Al-Mawasi area in Khan Yunis. This area suffers severely from water scarcity and salinity. Its groundwater became undrinkable. We want the international community to punish Israel for stealing water. In the 1970s, you could find drinkable groundwater 30 centimeters in depth and 10 meters before the shore. Now the groundwater in this spot, which is 800 meters away from the sea, is found undrinkable.
Irrigation water and treated wastewater are some recharge resources of the aquifer and the Gaza Strip. Some studies indicate 15 to 20% of the volume of domestic water supply recharges the aquifer.
Wastewater basins have been established in Al-Mawasi instead of those basins close to Sofa Terminal. They are now located over the Khan Yunis groundwater aquifer. Actually, this has not succeeded. The wastewater gathers to the west of the basins, which occupy approximately 1,000 dunams. This badly affects olives, guavas, mangoes, and the greenhouses. Palm trees are the only trees that are able to stand this kind of water.
الآن إحنا من خلال اللي هي ضغط المياه الجو المياه
العادية. Because of the intrusion of wastewater into the aquifer, we closed 25 wells